Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Victory Over Self Radio. Victory Over Self Radio, a podcast that covers all things athletics. We are incredibly excited and privileged to have on today Coach Scott Sahlwasser, who has been there and back again and now is residing down over in the Lone Star State, a little close to our very own Ross Garner. For Chris Kerr, Blair Bennett, welcome in here, Coach. Happy to have you.
I appreciate it, guys. I respect all of you and a fan of the show. First of all, you guys have the coolest name of any podcast by far.
That's a hot take. That's a hot take.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, when I saw the name of the podcast, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna come on here and we're gonna be talking some Jocko, some stuff. But no, man, you guys are awesome. Like I said, I respect you guys and looked at the questions, got some good stuff on there, some meaty stuff, and I'm excited to just talk shop.
Awesome. No, we're excited too. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty here, Coach, for those listening, if you are a fan of high-performance sports training like we all are, undoubtedly, you're going to be a fan of the Just Fly Performance podcast put on by Joel Smith. I've certainly listened to a million episodes. Finish this one first and then go check them out if you're not sure. So, Coach, the first question I have to know is, what is it like being the OG, the original first episode on Just Fly Performance podcast? Like, talk me through that, because that's a Hall of Fame moment right there.
Well, I appreciate that, man. I'm flattered. Once again, you know, part of it is that I've been around a long time, you know, and so Joel and I actually worked together at Cal.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So, all right.
Makes he sense. Was the track and field strength coach at Cal while I was on the football strength staff there, and sharing similar interests and so forth. You know, we got along well. And when I left for Tech, we kept in touch and he hit me up and was like, you know, I'm starting a podcast. It's going to be talking about all the stuff that you and I are into. Would you like to come on? I'm like, yeah, cool, man. Let's do it. So I think I've been on there like 3 or 4 times now, but the OG. Yeah, that's a polite way of saying it.
you're the original, and you obviously made a big impact and got the ball rolling, because I know for me, for the last however many years, it's always been a go-to. So appreciate your sacrifice and getting on there and getting the party started for everybody. Now, word on the street is you dabbled in Olympic weightlifting. So we got to know, on the platform, not in training where we have the straps and the music and everything, what's your proudest lift, the proudest moment up there, singlet, shoes, chalk, the whole thing?
Yeah, so my best lift of any exercise, relatively speaking, was always snatch. I was always really good at snatch for some reason. And I always joke it's because I don't like time under tension. And with a snatch, right, it's like you either you got it or you didn't. There's no struggle. You know, a clean, like you catch it in the bottom and you got to fight it up. It's like snatch. If I can just summon everything I got right now, I can put this thing overhead and it'll be over in a split second, you know. So I was always comparatively better at snatch. And my all-time PR was 137.5 kilos at 230 pounds body weight.
Wow. So, okay. All right. I like that. Yeah. That's up there. Holy. So follow up to that. Were you a t-shirt or no t-shirt during the snatch under your singlet?
Oh, no t-shirt. No t-shirt,
oh,
man.
Attaboy.
Taco meat spilling out the top. Yeah, man. Definitely no t-shirt guy.
Oh, that's beautiful. So we'll turn it over to Ross here with a question on people that have influenced you. But before we do, one last one. Favorite wrestler? Who you got for that? I've also heard you're a fan of we're going to call it God, WWF, because I feel like back in your day, that's what it was.
Obviously, you can tell how excited I am to answer this one.
Oh yeah, I figured. I knew this was your question.
Not many people. It's rare that somebody that you get to talk about this. You know, all time, definitely The Rock.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, all time, definitely The Rock. And he's obviously back now. I don't know if you guys watch or
I saw that. Yeah.
He's back. He's back. Yeah. So he's to me the greatest of all time. Cause it's entertainment, right? He's an amazing athlete and jacked and all that, mm-hmm. but he's phenomenal on the microphone, and that's a big piece of it. So, that's actually, you know, one of sad to say, being such a big WWE fan, one of the highlights of my career, which I don't know if you guys have seen it, but when I was at Tech, we put on a wrestling match, where I got put through a table by a John Cena lookalike, and it actually was the number one trend on social media for a day, and WWE sent me an authentic title belt.
Way.
So
like literally like I've been coaching for 21 years now, but if you said list your top 10 career highlights, that would be on there.
I love it. So was it the spinning one that Cena has?
Yeah. No. It was just a normal belt. No, but it's heavy. I mean, it's a legit belt. Yeah, no, it was cool. You could still, I mean, it's still out there. If you just look up Texas Tech coaches WWE match or something like that, it'll pop up. They had to, so Texas Tech released like a PG version of it, but I have the original version where I get pretty hot on the mic, you know, so I'm the bad guy. So I needed, cause obviously when I came out and Pat Mahomes is in the video too, which everyone always like sees the haircut and is like, oh my God, that's Pat Mahomes. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Watch the wrestling.
But
I had all the players cheered, and so I was the bad guy. So I needed them to boo me. So I started talking trash, spent about 5 minutes, talking trash on Lubbock, Texas. And, finally they start booing me. John Cena comes out, kicks my butt, pins me, and all of that. But yeah, sorry to ramble, but, you asked about wrestling and, you know, that's one of my, hot buttons. So.
No, you're good. We had a worker at Liberty who is now with Clemson football, the man, the myth, and the legend, Duncan Hundley. And he went with our women's hockey team to the metropolis of Minot, North Dakota for a national championship. The ladies brought home the title. And I was like, he's not going to use, wear, or want a ring. So I got him a championship title.
Oh,
and
awesome.
To this day, one of his most prized possessions. Well, Coach, thanks for allowing us to kind of just get a little insight of who you are. And Ross is going to kind of take it from here with who's helped kind of cultivate and develop you and influence you into the not just the person, but the coach you are. So go ahead, Ross. Take it away here, brother.
Yeah, we're going to make a note that we need to connect you and Duncan, because Duncan is a massive, massive wrestling fan.
I'll tell you who else is a huge wrestling WWE fan is Cliff Kingsbury. As big of a wrestling fan, wrestling historian, as you will find. Yeah, that's how that whole thing got started. He's like, let's have a wrestling match. I'm like, count me in. Let's do it. Man.
They did something with Clemson before the bowl game where Duncan got in the ring. They did like an amateur wrestling night or something because they had highlighted it. I know Duncan may or may not listen, but man, I think if Duncan was offered a full-time role in WWE right now, he would just stop immediately.
Yeah. Huge everything.
That's what I always tell people. Like if they're like, as much as I love what I do, that's the only other thing that I could do and be equally as happy, you know, but when I got out of college, you know, now they have the performance center and they have the WWE combine and the developmental pathways. Back then, like, you didn't know how to even get in it, right? Like, you had to know somebody who knew somebody. And if there would have been a tryout or a combine or some clear-cut path, I definitely would have done it. But it was like a pipe dream back then, right? It's like, how do you even get involved? So I moved on with my life, but yeah.
Well, Coach, as somebody that's met you in person, you are a big guy, so I think you would have fit in pretty good in that WWE scene. So with that, Coach, man, tell us a little bit, who's influenced you along the way, whether it's S&C coaches, sport coaches, kind of to get us a good idea of, you know, your general train of thought and your lens of coaching.
Yeah. So first and foremost, and this is my advice to any young strength coach, the best thing that you can do at the infancy of your career is find a quality mentor. Because honestly, like, that's been the biggest blessing to me, and I wouldn't be where I was, and it was pure luck, honestly. So when I was at, so after the Raiders, internship, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to be a strength coach now. Now what do I need to do? Okay, I'm going to go get my master's degree. And I'm going to be a GA. That way I can, you know, get school paid for. I get to coach and get my master's. So I go to Sacramento State University. Actually the rival school of where I went, got my bachelor's, UC Davis. And, our head strength coach there, his name was Gary Uribe. And he, was an assistant, basically the quote unquote speed guy for USC when USC was USC, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, like those, you know, big time USC teams. Mm-hmm. He was the speed guy for those teams, the top assistant there, came to Sacramento State and was our head strength coach. And to me, if there's one piece of my career that if I changed it, I don't think, know if I'd be where I am right now, it would be working for him, because I had the good fortune of learning the right way right away. Because again, okay, I did this internship, but really I'm so green. Like, I know some lifts, I know some drills. I'm in good shape and like I have good energy and stuff, but I know so little in the grand scheme of things that if I had worked for somebody that taught me how to do it wrong, I might think that's how you do it. This is what we're doing. You know, we're sitting down during workouts and we're on our phone. I mean, you know, but, he taught me the right way to do it right away. I bought in immediately. He told me that, you know, I get that this is Sac State, but, you know, in my mind, it's USC. And I promise you that if you coach at the level that I demand that you do in this environment, that you will be able to be dropped into any strength program in the country and you'll be able to excel. And I was like, sounds good to me. Let's do it. So it was a grind. Luckily, I was young. Because, you know, I think back to how many groups in a row I trained and how many athletes I trained on a daily basis. It's, you know, it'd be tough now, but, I had so much fun, and he really taught me the ropes. And also the cool thing was, you know, in those days, like, speed development in that realm wasn't to the level it is now, right? There still were a lot of schools that just lift heavy and condition. Right. And he put a premium on teaching acceleration mechanics, teaching maximal velocity mechanics, sprinting and then resting so that you can sprint full speed, jumping, throwing med balls, lifting the barbell, not only maximally, but dynamically, with intent, for explosiveness and rate of force development. So really, you know, it was, and so that's what I came to believe as the way to, that's the way to train. And I still believe that's the way to train. You know, obviously the X's and O's have evolved over the years, but the mindset and the belief of this is what athletes need, and this is what we do, and this is how to conduct yourself as a coach, and this is how to be organized. This is how to, have expectations and accountability. And I can't put a price on how valuable that was to me. So that was my first mentor in the field, and a mentor in so many ways. And again, I wouldn't be here without him. Now I've worked obviously for tons and tons of great coaches, and there's no way I could list them all, but one coach that I would like to bring up that really impacted the way that I view coaching and teaching is Jack Clark, and also Tom Billups, and they are the rugby coaches at Cal. Now, if you follow rugby or specifically Cal rugby, you know that they've won, I don't know, 24 national championships or 22 national championships. So that they've been pretty darn successful. And their entire philosophy on mental toughness and accountability and leadership was really refreshing and I don't want to say mind-blowing, but completely changed the way that I viewed coaching and the way I viewed my own personal assessment. Now, obviously, Jocko has literally a book called Extreme Ownership. But this was, you know, before that, and that was basically what I learned, extreme ownership. You know, you are the professional. You are the adult in the room. And if guys are not living up to your standard, they're not turds. They're not, oh, they're just lazy. It's your fault, man. Like, you're allowing it, you know, you're allowing it. Something you're allowing it, or what you're doing is not working. It's on you to figure it out. And so that just blew my mind and had a huge impact on me, to where now it's like, okay, every athlete that I coach, and obviously we know some are harder workers than others. Some, all you got to do is turn the lights on and the stereo on, and they're going to get after it. Right. But a lot aren't. And so that's really the point in my career where I decided, you know what, I'm going to be a Swiss Army knife, man. I'm not only going to be able to coach the meathead that, you know, comes in, you know, dry scooping pre-workout and headbutting his teammates ready to get after it. I'm going to be able to coach the kid that doesn't really like the weight room. I'm going to be able to coach the kid that just wants to play ball, you know, doesn't understand why we're doing all of this. I'm going to be able to reach that kid. So that's really where I would say in my career, I matured and got beyond just, cause to that point in my career, if I understood the science really well, and I could explain myself and communicate really well, and I brought good energy, I was good. But that took my psychology to another level and really made me mature as a coach. So I would say that experience, seeing them work and seeing how their team operated, and then also obviously becoming a dad, impacted my coaching too, in terms of patience. You know, I definitely was nowhere near as patient when I was younger as I am now. But being a dad on a daily basis, like, you realize that, you know, yes, you don't lower your standard, you know, yes, you keep them accountable, but, you know, you got to be patient, because if you think you're just going to show up and just because you said it, it's all going to magically get done, man, that's not how it happens. So.
No, that's the truth right there, man. So, and I want to highlight, man, learning the right way right away is getting stolen immediately.
Yeah.
And that's a tattoo right there. Mm-hmm. So Coach, I want to talk a little bit about, you've had to transition several times between different jobs, whether it's been college, NFL, high school, all that good stuff. What have been for you in those transition periods, the first steps as far as establishing what you want to do, your program, how you're coaching and all that?
Yeah. You know, obviously that has evolved over my career, and it sounds, you know, kind of cliche or kind of cheesy, but like, the right answer to that is relationships. You know, building relationships, not only with the athletes, but also with administration, with the coaching staffs, you know, getting trust, buy-in, all of those things, you know. Obviously, when I got to Bishop Lynch, I knew that I would get default respect and default buy-in just because of my resume. Mm-hmm. But I knew that wouldn't last forever, right? Like, at first, like, I'm the shiny new toy. Like, this is cool. We got a guy who coached this dude and that dude and, you know, all that. So that got me in the door with the ability to get the program going. But I knew that if I didn't back that up, you know, that wasn't going to last forever. So, I mean, but definitely the right answer to that is relationships. Beyond that, understanding that every situation is unique and every situation is different. And I didn't even do a great job of this when I got to Bishop Lynch. Like, obviously I realized that this was a high school, not a Power Five college football team. But I didn't really know what would be different about it. You know, what would they need? What would they not need? You know? So I wrote my, you know, we write the world's greatest program that has every answer to everything. Right. And then you just see how it goes. And I realized quickly that, okay, this is great and it's helping, but this is not exactly what they need, you know? And if you ask me to summarize what I mean by that, like, obviously, with my background, I've always been a big fan of getting out on the field and doing a ton of movement, right? And we still do that. But at the level I'm at now, I quickly realized we need to spend more time in the weight room. Mm. You know, we just do. And, you know, I'll never be able to not go outside and do acceleration, maximal velocity, decel, all of that. I mean, I love that too much. And the kids need that too, obviously. But we spend way more time in the weight room than I ever thought I would. You know, this time of year, it's probably like 75% lifting weights and 25% moving, you know, and that will evolve as we get closer to spring ball and as we get certainly closer to the season to more of a 50-50 split. But, you know, I would say that. I would say you get somewhere, first of all, establish relationships, and second of all, really think about what it is that that they need where you're at, you know. And I could have got there and I could have walked in and been like, wow, these guys are like enormous. Like, they look like a college football team. Well, maybe they do need to spend 50% of the time outside right from the get-go. But we certainly didn't. That was not our limiting factor, you know. So I think being open-minded, like, yes, we have our program that we're used to. Yes, we have our biases and what we like to do. But really step back and take a look and think about, are you giving the athletes what they need? Like, what is their limiting factor right now? What is keeping us from reaching our potential the most, and shift and adjust based off of that, I would say.
That's funny you say that, because this is my third high school that I've been at. So I was at one in Virginia, one in Florida, and then now in Fort Worth here in Cleburne. And it's been interesting seeing the training background of each state that I've been at. And coming to Texas, everybody's got a powerlifting background. They really love to train. And so it's been interesting. Like you're saying, you step in and it's different roles. You're seeing what they need. And I would agree with you on, and I didn't always think that of, yeah, our guys need to really spend more time in the weight room probably than what I was doing. And now that I'm seeing them, it's like, yeah, let's get some heavier weight on the bar. And then we'll still do our field work, like you're saying. And we're about that 75-25 split right now as well. And we're lifting first thing. And so we go out, do the field work, and then we come in and do our lifting. So that's all. It's always interesting as you go and you see different kids, like, they need the same stuff at the high school level for the most part. It just kind of boils down to how much time they've had under the bar. And thankfully in Texas, they typically have a good amount of time. And so that helps us a lot. And so with that, coach, and this will be my last question before I pass it over to Chris here. What are the three things that you look at when you're evaluating your guys, when you first get them in the weight room, and then also when you first see them on the field running? So just seeing the differences between those two things.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in the weight room, technique and safety come first, right? And now, as you said, everybody's got different training backgrounds. So that being said, I can't wait for every athlete to score a 21 on the FMS to put some weight on their back, right? So we've got to move weight at some point. Now, that's a judgment call, or, you know, it doesn't have to be a judgment call. I suppose you could have some tried and true protocols for that. But for me, it's, okay, at what point do I feel like the technique is safe enough that nobody's, you know, good enough that no one's going to get hurt, first and foremost. And number two, that we're going to receive the desired training stimulus from the exercise. So, you know, if you are cleaning or doing Olympic variations, is the technique good enough? Not only that they won't get hurt, but that they'll actually get more explosive or more powerful from doing it. So once those are in place, you know, we'll start to load it. But that's the biggest thing, you know, as far as the weight room, as far as outside, you know, I don't think I'll ever be, I think I'm probably a little, maybe it's easier for guys to pick up weight, you know, lifting technique, but I don't think I'll ever be pleased outside. You know, I think my athletes will say I'll always be able to find something that I don't like about their technique, but same thing, you know, technique and outside, it's kind of the same thing as the weight room. A lot, some guys have been taught, and sometimes that's not always a good thing because maybe they have bad habits that you need to break. But I would say just a basic technical model that you can evolve from, both in terms of acceleration and maximal velocity. I tell them all the time, look, I don't expect you to be Usain Bolt. All I expect from you is that I can tell that you're listening and being intentional about these drills, because some of them are silly drills. Like if you were a Martian and you just looked like, what are these guys doing right now? You know, but that you're being intentional about these drills. They have a purpose. The purpose is as follows. And that you're trying your best and that, that you improve, and you'd be surprised, man. I've got guys that I thought were bad athletes that were diligent enough, and now if you saw them sprint, you'd be like, okay, that looks how it should look. You know, I mean, and at my age and at my stage of my career, you know, I look perfect when I sprint. I just don't move very fast, you know. And so if that's you as an athlete, then great, then that's you, you know. But again, I think they're tied together, which is, you know, if in our realm. At the high school level, a lot of kids aren't fast enough, which, and I know we'll get into the force velocity profiling later and all that, but a lot of kids aren't strong enough to be fast. You know, like a lot of, like literally my, you know, my fastest kid on campus is actually a baseball player. And he ran a laser timed, Valid Smart Speed. He ran a laser timed sub 6.4. It was like a 6.37 or whatever. Valid Smart Speed laser time 60. Incredible, right? And he's 160-ish pounds. But, you know, he's deadlifting. I never really, like, max him. But he can deadlift, you know, well over 400 pounds clean and crisp, you know. And so, and obviously that's one person. But just in general, you know, a lot of the kids that aren't as fast, at least at this level, aren't as fast as you'd like them to be, typically just don't have a big enough engine, you know, and that starts in the weight room. And obviously, as we'll talk about later, has to cross the bridge and transfer into movement through a variety of different means. But at this age, it definitely starts in the weight room. So yeah. So in the weight room, I'm looking at safety and technique, but then we're going to load it once we're safe and effective, we're going to load it. And then outside, obviously same thing, you know, if we wait for you to look perfect before we're, doing maximal sprinting, you know, we're going to be waiting your entire career. So, yeah, hopefully that answered your question.
Oh, it did. Yeah. That's something. I got drastically more aggressive on the loading as I got to Texas. At other spots, I wasn't necessarily that way. And as soon as I got to Texas, within a month, I was like, okay, we're going to go. These kids know what to do and we're going to train. Chris, what do you got?
Yeah. So coach, I appreciate what you're saying weight room wise, what you're saying field wise. And within there, you kind of just mentioned getting to work with Les Spellman, obviously kind of a big name, we're just going to call it the sprint speed combine training world, and his usage of 1080 motions, 1080 sprint, GPS, everything like that. So having the fortune, the benefit the opportunity to kind of work with him and work with some of those athletes, I believe so, of getting ready for the combine. Mm-hmm. Just kind of, you know, what were some of those takeaways that you had there? And then from there, I'm going to want to kind of dig into some more specific force velocity stuff. And hopefully you could kind of share some of those secrets with me, being somebody that has a 1080. But then I'd also like to kind of make it practical and useful for people that might just have a set of lasers and some sleds. Right. But you're working with Les, big name on social media, awesome guy if you've ever heard him present. Let the people know. Give us some thoughts there.
Yeah, so I'll kind of paint the background picture first as far as force velocity profiling and all that goes, and it actually ties into Les as well. So my first kind of foray into profiling anything. So I worked at, I don't know if you guys have heard of Sparta, Sparta Performance Science. So now I believe they're primarily simply a software company. I don't know if they even have a training facility anywhere anymore, but back then they're big in the force plate world. Back then, we had a training facility, and this would have been 2011. So this was really, really cutting edge stuff at that point. Mm-hmm. So I worked for them at the very beginning. I believe we had maybe 5 or 6 employees at the time. Mm-hmm. And we had force plates, and we were jump profiling people on mm-hmm. the force plates. And talk about an influential kind of grassroots, groundbreaking experience. We would literally, because there was nothing out there at the time like this. So there was really nothing, you know, to compare it to. We would jump profile or have people jump on a force plate, basically, get the raw data, create the force time curve, paint the picture, and we would sit in the boardroom with the whiteboard and look at these graphs and try to come to conclusions on what these athletes were good at, what they were not so good at, what interventions they needed, so forth and so on. And talk about groundbreaking, you know, really, really cutting edge stuff. And funny enough, how this ties into Les is Les was actually an athlete there for a little bit of time. So I actually coached Les. For a bit of time. I believe it was after track and field. I think he tried to play rugby sevens for a while. And this was maybe at that time. That was where we first met, was at Sparta. But as far as the force velocity stuff goes, that really was my first experience. But then it got me thinking, like, if we can do this with jumps, like, there's got to be a way to do it. It's got to tie into sprinting somehow, right? Like, mm-hmm. this has to affect, there's got to be a way to do this with sprinting. And I actually wrote, and I believe it's still, you know, Sparta, it's been so long, like, a lot of my stuff has been either erased or deleted or, you know, fallen off the edge of the earth as far as the internet is concerned. But I actually wrote an article called Force Plates and 40s, How to Sniper Speed Development or something like that. And this would have been in like 2015, maybe. Mm-hmm. I was at Cal at the time. So anyway, so long story short, I leave Sparta and I go to Cal. And I kept those relationships at Sparta, was able to be the first college football program with a force plate in 2015, maybe in 14, 15, something like that at Cal. And did the same stuff with those guys, jumped them, tried to come up with some rudimentary correlations between how they jumped and what they needed speed wise, what they were good at speed wise, what they were poor at speed wise. And that's what that article is about. So that's really the caveman drawing on the wall, version of force velocity profiling. And now we have, obviously, as you mentioned, the 1080, we've got ways to measure horizontal force while you're sprinting. Mm-hmm. That was it back then, man. Like, let's get these movement signatures, we called them, and try to tie something together. So as far as with less, obviously we had the 1080. So as I mentioned, that gives you the horizontal component in the actual movement. But I'll be honest with you, though, like, though we used it extensively in that period of time, majority of my career, it has been laser timers and sleds.
Wow.
You know, because that was the only 1080 I've ever been around. And so, you know, while I understand and understood what we did, and you know, I'm happy to answer questions about lasers and sleds too, because that's been, and GPS as well. GPS makes it a lot easier now too. Mm-hmm. Being able to get velocities, and it saves you a step in terms of the math component. But, so that's kind of the background in terms of where a lot of that stuff came from, you know. And then I stumbled across JB Marin, actually developed a personal relationship with him, and he fed me all kinds of data and cool stuff that I had never seen before. And it just kind of fueled my fire to continue to do this. And then as time went on, my sprint app came out, and that was, you know, tedious, but it was at least a way to do it. If you didn't have 40 yards of force plates, and then now obviously 1080 and all that, it's easy, but.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you for just kind of like the rundown of the background.
Yeah. The OG, the OG, etymology of force velocity profiling.
And so here's a question I love asking coaches that have force plates. Most of your major sports, they have a vertical component to it, right? Basketball, volleyball, any other sort of jumping sport. When you were training football, how did you feel about vertical testing and vertical profiling in a sport that was so horizontally oriented? Like, now that I have a 1080, like, all I care about is horizontal coordination, right, force, right, power. So kind of talk me through that. Did you just find great ways to do it, or did you always know in the back of your head of like, this is great, but could be better if we can measure horizontally?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, specificity is king, right? So until you can measure it horizontally, like, you really don't know. But we got to the point where we had tested so many athletes that you started to notice vertical trends and what it would look like in horizontal movement, you know. So for instance, guys that had so I'm speaking vertically now on a vertical jump, guys that had high eccentric rate of force development, meaning their force time curve spikes very abruptly. Those guys are going to be good decelerators, even horizontally, right? Like, they're able neurologically break, so to speak, really well. And that transfers, you know, in my experience, that transfers to horizontal movement as well. Guys that have a very high peak to their force time curve, they have high concentric rate of force development, they're very explosive, they're going to be able to accelerate well. Right, they can generate a lot of force concentrically in a short period of time. They're going to be able to accelerate well, and that plays out horizontally as well. And then guys that have a large impulse, provided, now obviously I should say, provided that the other requisite traits are there. Right. Because obviously we all know it's not unidirectional. Like, there's a lot of things that got to fall into place. But let's assume that all the other pieces are there. Guys that have a large impulse tend to use momentum really well. Mm-hmm. Well, what is maximal velocity? Maximal velocity is simply building on momentum. Right. So you can continue to produce force over a greater period of time. Also typically means that you have less mobility restrictions. And are able to produce force through a greater range of motion. So those are all things that you can see on a vertical on a vertical force profile. And in my experience, those have all played out in the horizontal realm. But as you said, you know, you won't know officially. And if you can test it horizontally, that's better. Certainly. But in my experience, those are some traits that you can see vertically that tend to translate well to horizontal movement.
I love that. And then you may have noticed this as well. Typically, you come in, put your hands on your hips, and jump. You can't typically all the time, always, especially in season, you know, get on a line and sprint 10, 20 meters.
Right.
And that's where I have found the limitations with the horizontal. It's great to have, and it's a phenomenal way to program training, but I can't utilize it all the time or test or retest as frequently as I would like, just because of the high demand, the, you have to feel real good or whatever else we want to call it of sprinting versus jumping.
Right. And it's quicker. You can typically run guys through a vertical jump a little bit quicker than get rigged up and sprint, you know? But I obviously, you know, horizontally, a lot of the similar traits, you know, are important. Your guys that, and I read the notes on the questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see RF, DRF, like all of those things, because that's, I mean, that's a connoisseur right there. Like, now we're really talking about some stuff, you know, a lot of these podcasts, I mean, you don't go to that depth. So when I read that, I was like, okay, let me put my big boy pants on, because we're going to be talking about some real stuff here. But I mean, so for people that don't know, I mean, those are the two big things that you can affect that will have a significant impact on your force production. RF, so ratio of force, directing it more horizontally. And I've seen guys, you know, it doesn't sound like much, but if you get like a 6 or 7% improvement in that, it'll completely change guys' time, like in a positive way, because now, you know, you're basically setting them up, like we talked about in coaching, starting the right way right away. I mean, that's every step in the 40 is less important after that, right? So you come out at a much more horizontal angle, and then DRF is simply decrease of ratio of force. So how fast do you give that up? So if I come out steeper and I give it up less, meaning like I come up more gradually, obviously physics, basic knowledge of physics will tell you I'm going to be able to accelerate deeper and to a higher speed. So, I mean, like those, I think conceptually, not only to you as the practitioner, but to the athlete, like those make sense, right? Like when we're talking about, you know, athletes think, oh, stay low or whatever. But I mean, you get on the wall and you explain it to them and stuff. But what I'm trying to do is orient you more horizontally. And so when we do that, I'm setting you up for success right from the start. And then the DRF, that's kind of the sneaky hole in a lot of people's games. Right. Because if you look at the way most people program and the way that most people think about speed, right, if you've done your due diligence and you're a student of the game, you know the importance of the start. Right. So there's your RF. And especially these days, you know the importance of maximal velocity, because everyone, you know, wants to hit a certain amount of miles per hour. But there's a big piece in between. Right. It's like driving into a tunnel. Right. You get out, you get on the freeway, you know, and then you drive into the tunnel and then you come out the other end. Well, what happens in the tunnel has a big effect on your time. And I've seen so many guys, myself included, that the numbers wouldn't add up. Right. It's like, OK, well, on paper, this looks good and my top speed looks good, but my time is crappy. Something's happening there in that tunnel. And that's where the DRF measurement really, really comes in handy. And so you say, how do you affect that. I mean, that's where your variable resistance runs come into play. Yeah. And obviously on the 1080, it's simple because you can figure out exactly what that load is that you need and dial it up right then and there. It's a little more complicated with the sled, but it's the same premise. You see what percentage speed decrement you're able to hit at different loads. And so you address those different decrements. So typically that speed strength load that like on a sled, it would be like 20-ish% decrement, 25% decrement. I've seen good results in DRF with that kind of moderate load, assuming maximal intent. But yeah.
No, that was perfect. I'm glad you kind of segued into it. And so for those listening, Almada, I sent Coach here kind of my step-by-step that I stole from Les Spellman and Cam Joss on 1080 sprint webinars. Just my step-by-step when performing a force velocity profile of what I'm looking at and what I'm kind of doing first. So Coach, if I could just kind of go over these and you could tell me, hey,
please, yeah,
yes, or like, hey, think about this first, but you're kind of mentioning it. So step one, I run a force velocity profile, whether it's through 1080 sprint software, JB Marin's formulas that he has free online. First thing I'm going to want is over 50% rate of force max. So in other words, my ratio of horizontal and vertical force as I'm coming out in my start, I want over 50. Are you on board with that? Are you like, hey, get that as high as you can? Give me thoughts.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, well, once you get past 50, it's tough. Guys that are below 50, it's easy to make improvements on. Once you get to like 56, 57%, like it doesn't sound like that much more, but that's past that is like rarefied air. So it's tough to get too much better than that unless you're working with some really, really fast dudes. But I would agree. And that makes common sense, right? Like if you talk to a layperson, right, if I'm trying to go horizontally, do I want the majority of my force directed horizontally or vertically? Oh, well, you want more of it to be horizontal, right? So there you go, 50%. If I'm above 50%, at least I'm directing more force. I'm producing enough force to defy gravity and keep myself upright, but I'm directing the majority of the force away from the direction that I'm trying to go. So no, I'm 100% on board.
And correct me if I'm wrong, or just add on to this. What we've learned in every textbook, what you and Ross were mentioning about when it comes to Texas high school strength conditioning, is start with strength first. And in order to have a good RF max, you need to be strong enough in the foot, ankle, knee, hip to hold horizontally oriented positions. And then kind of the second step in this kind of profiling or what to do with it would be get to 10 newtons per kilogram of force. And again, another kind of force or strength to body weight ratio type of thing. On board with that of, hey, start with strength to body weight ratios first when it comes to your biggest bang for your buck.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is where it gets a little tricky. And this is the beauty of a 1080 or something like that, right? Because we're talking about force and we're talking about strength. And even though they're like mostly synonymous, like they're kind of not, if that makes sense. So we can all think of the kid who's fast, but doesn't back squat very much or doesn't trap bar deadlift very much or whatever. We can all think of that guy, right? But I would argue that doesn't mean that he's not strong. That means he's not strong in traditional barbell movements, right? And so that's the crazy thing. Like when I was, you know, taking you guys back to the Stone Age and talking about my early years of force plate testing, you know, back in the day, that was really an epiphany we had, is that like, okay, some of these guys are not our best squatters or deadlifters, but they're producing a lot of force. on the force plate, you know, and it could just be for whatever reason, anthropometrics or psychology or whatever. Okay. And that doesn't mean, I'm by no means arguing that like you shouldn't obviously lift heavy weights, because you should, and majority of the time, that is the place to start. But you can produce force in a very specific way and be fast without being strong at traditional barbell movements. So that's where it's like, okay, that is where, you know, we talked about earlier where vertical, I do believe there are a lot of pieces of the vertical force profile that do transfer, but that is where it's beneficial to have a specific measurement like that, because you will find guys that don't squat as much as you would think or don't deadlift as much as you would think, but yet they can still produce a lot of force in that horizontal fashion or even in the vertical fashion in a jump, as we saw on the force plates.
And this is one for me when I've been looking at my 1080 data. If I have somebody that's like kind of close to that 10 newtons per kilogram and they're a little lower on that meters per second for velocity, I just kind of get lost in the weeds of, okay, they're kind of close on the force. RF max looks pretty good, but the velocity is pretty low. Would you kind of say, hey, just ride the lightning, get their horizontal force where it kind of needs to be, strength to body weight ratio type of thing, and that will bring up the velocity? Or, hey, just double down on the velocity because it's lacking further behind than the force. You know, how rigid should I stay to kind of these steps in the process I have written down here?
I would say, so at that point, I would ask myself what their ultimate goal is. Is this a track and field athlete? Is this a football lineman? Because obviously certain things are more important to specific sports and specific positions than others. If you had the exact same set of numbers and you asked me the question that you just asked me and you said, this is our starting D lineman, I might say, yeah, double down on the force, man. I mean, that's probably going to help him more. You know, but if you said, okay, this is our starting outside receiver, or this is a 100-meter kid in track, I might say, you know, raise his ceiling, get the velocity up, and hope that transfers across the board, you know? So I think that's where it's a little more nuanced in terms of like, what is their ultimate goal? You know, is it to run a time? Or are they just trying to get better at their position or their sport? And that's where, like I said, you know, if it's a lineman, I would say, well, probably the force piece is more important. If it's a skill guy or a track athlete or something like that, well, maybe the velocity piece is more important.
No, that's great. That does help a lot. I just wrote down here of like, when you're making these decisions, you have to go individual. Individual based off of the sport, individual based off of the position, that definitely helps. And this might be a little off script, so I apologize with that one, but I've been chasing this golden goose here of watts per kilogram, and I'm trying to go down this hole of like, if I have an in-body and I could get their muscle mass, their body fat percentage, if I have a watt bike, and just in terms of like an assault bike, if I have a 1080 sprint, in your experience, or as I'm kind of describing these, do you think it's possible to find the ideal body fat, body weight, muscle mass percentage, whatever we want to call that, to ratio for the ideal body weight type for the ideal watts per kilogram for an athlete?
I love that. I do think that's possible. I certainly don't have the answer to that, but when you please let me know. Like, so I'm married to a dietitian. She's better at what she does than I am. She's got about 36 NFL combine guys right now, including about 5 first rounders that she's doing their nutrition for.
Okay.
So I'll ask her. I'll be like, so, you know, what do you think body fat wise? Like, what do you look at there in terms of mm-hmm. you work with the sprint coaches and as far as, because I know they take their body comps and all that, you know, as far as what yeah. their optimal level, I'm sure it's subjective to a point. I doubt they're to the mm-hmm. level that you're speaking of, but yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Because we're talking about moving, our body through space. And obviously it's a trade-off between, we don't want excess cargo. Mm-hmm. but if we try too hard to remove all excess cargo, we're probably costing ourselves some strength as well. So I do believe that there's absolutely an optimal number. And I honestly think that's brilliant. I've never seen it. I've never seen or heard anybody think of it like that. But between mm-hmm. myself and my wife, now we have a good bit of conversation because I'm going to be like, man, this is what Chris talked about. What do you think? And how could we do that? That's fascinating. I absolutely love that. I'm on
board. I'll be honest. I wish you just told me no, because I talked to
I think you can. Yeah. I just don't know how, you know, I don't have the pathway, but.
So we got to talk to your wife now, Chris. That's what I just heard.
But here's the thing. Like when I took you guys in the time machine, to us and our two force plates and our whiteboard, I mean, at that point, who would have thought that there would have been a 1080? You know, we were having guys jump on a force plate and trying to look for trends and see if we could find commonalities in how they moved and could we extrapolate from there. So it's every bit like where you are right now, you know, and 10 years from now, there'll be a machine that can do it, mm-hmm. you know. It's like maybe like a bod pod with a treadmill inside of it or something where
and I'm sorry, Coach, we have you for over an hour. Are you good on time or?
Yeah, I'm good. I don't hear, I have a 8-month old son, but I don't hear him crying. So.
Okay. Yeah. My 7.5 month isn't crying either.
So congrats. We're good to go here. So late June. They were born.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
We were June 7th.
Oh wow. Yeah, June 15th. Yeah, we're fired up. It's a lot of fun. Oh wow. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. It's almost 8 months as well. I just looked at the date.
Yeah. So that's number 5 for me. So this is my second marriage. I have 2 daughters. She's got 2 sons, and now this is our 1 together. And he was unplanned. Obviously blessed to have him, you know, and she says that he was an answer to our prayers. I'm like, nah, we had millions of people praying for him. All the Dallas Cowboy fans that, you know, wanted a Super Bowl were praying for the savior. And now here he is.
There you go. That's a question I always want to ask. We're just going to call them the OG coaches that have all the knowledge and the skill and have raised kids up. Right. So like for Blair, Ross and I having younger kids, like what did you do? How did you train them? What would you do? What would you do differently? Cause I'm a little crazy of holding my son today doing figure 8 infinity walks. If you've heard, seen them trying to get them ready. But back to the watts per kilogram. It's just, I feel like there's gotta be a way, like the cyclists have it figured out.
Right.
So if they have it figured out for a 20-minute test on a bike of you have to be at 6 to 7 watts per kilogram to win the Tour de France, there has to be some ratio that we could figure out with a 1080, with an in-body or a DEXA, maybe a watt bike as well with like a Wingate test. So there's got to be something out there, but I'm thankful that you said it's possible, but at the same time, I wish you shot me down.
I think it's possible. Yeah. I've never thought of that until 5 minutes ago. So, but now I'm going to stew over it. So
I don't even have the athlete population that can handle the nutritional demands to get there. But every now and then we'll have that one athlete who wants to get after it. And I just want to have the answers for him. Thanks for keeping the dream alive, but at the same time, no, thank you for all the work that's going to be coming from it. That's going to be tough. But we've been talking a lot about kind of the technology of the 1080 sprint force plates. Can you just give us a slight idea here, Coach? Then I'll kind of turn it over to Blair with another technology idea. Everything we're sort of talking about here, how can our users at universities, private sector, high schools that might not have all this technology kind of implement some of the things that you and I were discussing or some of the training ideas that you have?
Yeah, man, I think and obviously there are ways, but I would not sell yourself short in terms of technology. Like, for instance, I thought the same thing, right? I'm coming to a high school, like, I'm going to have to, you know, really, I'm glad I'm the OG because I'm going to have to take it back to before we had all this stuff. But I'll be honest with you, like, I have smart speed lasers. I have Vald smart jump mats. I have Tendo units. I have StatSports GPS. And I don't have by any means a Power 5 college budget. You know what I mean? And so mm-hmm. all of those things, though not cheap, to me are a solid investment, especially because typically, like, the room you're in is kind of the room you're in, right? So, like, I get an equipment budget every year, but I look around my room and I'm like, there's no more space for any equipment. Like, what am I going to, you know, like, I mean, yeah, I could replace all the dumbbells, but it's like, I'm just going to replace a 100-pound dumbbell with a dumbbell that also weighs 100 pounds and just looks a little nicer. Like, how is that a good investment, right? So I was like, well, so I'm not going to be buying equipment. Let's invest in technology. I mean, and because I truly believe that at any level you're at, and believe me, there's people far more technological than I am, but I truly believe that no matter what level you're at, like, technology, if you know how to use it and you know what you're looking for, helps immensely. Like, it just, even if it's so simple as intent, like, so for instance, like, every speed day we laser time something. Right. And obviously, yes, I track it. And yes, I'm able to go back and see how much you've improved. But honestly, in the moment, it's not even about that. It's about, if we're going to be training speed, I need you to run as fast as possible. And what better way to do that than to have a number pop up? You know, and so in the moment, it's not about data tracking. It's about, you're going to run as fast as you possibly can because you know that it's going to be evaluated. There's a number. Same thing with the jumps. You know, I use the jump mats in session because when we do plyos, it's like, I could, you know, if you just go over into the corner and do your, you know, weighted jumps, just, you know, on the ground, in the air, like, you might get after it, you might not, but I'll tell you what, once again, if a number pops up, you're going to get after it. I even notice it with myself. When I use it in my training, you know, like, I'll get on and I'll jump and I'll be like, huh, that's not right. I must not be getting after it. Boom. And then I'll jump like 3 inches higher, like, just like that, right? You don't realize how big of a role intent plays. And when we're talking about serious central nervous system training, like, that last bit is what we're after, right? And so same thing with the Tendo units, you know, and this is where I am a little bit old school. I like the Tendo unit because I don't like iPads, I don't like phones, you know, I just want a screen with the number to pop up on and you can look up there. But same thing with the barbell. We move every rep with maximal intent. The only thing that changes is the prescribed load. And as you guys know, if I want to work on this type of strength, we'll move it at this speed. We'll put a load on that makes it move at that speed. If I want to work on this type of strength, we'll put a load on that makes it work, makes it move at that speed. But you're trying to move it as fast as you can. The weight will slow you down depending on what I prescribe percentage wise. And it's crazy. Like, you know, the intent has completely gone through the roof in terms of, you know, in back in the day, compensatory acceleration training, you know, Fred Hatfield, but trying to accelerate the barbell. Like, we go heavy, but honestly, like, I've seen more improvements working slightly submaximal, still heavy, but trying to move it as fast as possible. I've seen as much improvement from that than true max effort training. So, you know, that's what we use that for. But again, circling back around, just intent. And we track all the data and all of that, you know, and like I said, GPS is too, you know, they see their max velocity each day, but it's about trying to best that number on in the weight room. You know how much weight's on the bar, but in movement, we don't quantify it for them. Well, if you don't quantify it, all you have to look at is qualitative, right? Oh, my guys all look good. Well, like I said, I look great. If you saw a video of me sprinting, you'd be like, man, that's teach tape, except, oh, these numbers suck, right? So it's got to be – it can't just be qualitative. It's got to be quantitative as well. And I think the technology allows you to put numbers on movement and – you know, and yes, like I said, demonstrating the progress and tracking all that is great. But in the moment, I just want to squeeze that last bit of juice out of you in terms of effort and intent. And that, to me, that's really the value. So if you're at a school, you don't have a huge budget. Do you really ask yourself, do you really need those dumbbells or do you really need like, you know, new kettlebells? Maybe if you don't have dumbbells, then yeah, you probably do, you know, but. You know, at some point, like I got to the point, well, I can get newish stuff of stuff I already have, but this will work. Let me get the technology instead. And it's completely enhanced our program, hands down.
Well, I love it. I love to hear it. And just to give some support to that as well, I have a stalker radar gun. And if you want to get some med balls tossed around, you just point that thing behind it and the boys will try to kill themselves. And this past Saturday, the NSCA had their Virginia State Clinic, and a phenomenal coach we have here at Liberty, Connor Shep, was presenting on ACL return to play. And a few of his athletes were in the audience, and I was sitting next to them. And he showed, is it a spider graph, Ross, where it's like the bunch of star points? And he showed that, and they all just looked at each other like, oh, it's so cool. Look at that, whatever. And it was like, I just wrote the note of like, the athletes want to see that. Like, they want to see the data. They want to see trend lines. They want to see ups and downs and improvements. And it was great for me because Blair and I could agree. Ross Garner is world class on the data. And I am bottom barrel. I would be scooping coal on the Titanic. That's where my seat would have been. And Ross would have been top tier for sure. But yeah, it's such a good point there, coach. And, if you don't have the tech, you don't have the intent. It's kind of a big takeaway for me. So I appreciate that. Now moving sort of away from, a little bit of, you know, weight room X's and O's, we can kind of talk weight room execution. And you've been around, so many different facilities at different levels now here at the high school level. Blair has a great point here of kind of flow in weight room on field. Blair, just kind of hammer that point home for us.
Yeah. Here. So I guess I've got a million questions because I've been sitting here like I could go any different direction. And before I get to, you know, the on field, off field flow, I wanted to ask you, because we talked so much about the tech side and, you know, you said you are the OG. So I just want to pick your brain really quick. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but you've got a system and you love to individualize. I know I've read some of your articles and I'm curious, if you took away most or all of the technology, how would you still make your system work and develop your athletes?
Yeah, I mean, I would, our program, like our the workout itself, like what it says on the piece of paper wouldn't change much at all. I just wouldn't be able to track it as well, and I don't think I would get the same level of effort.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, like there's other low tech ways to get guys to run fast. You can race. We do that too. Mm. You know, we'll race. I think anytime you put guys in a competitive situation, you know, you're going to get output out of them. We'll race. I think honestly, like even though this is mostly a speed conversation, I think what I value the most technologically is the VBT, because in our environment, you know, and I've seen a few guys post on this, like you would think like, okay, it's high school. Like, isn't that some advanced stuff? Like, do they really need to be doing VBT? But like, for me, number one, I don't really have accurate maxes. And even if I did have accurate maxes, at the high school level, if you get to a point in an athlete where like, all right, we put 80% of an accurate max on the bar, you know, you might do 5 reps, you know, Ross might do 6 reps, I might do 4 reps, you know, but it's, you kind of know what you're going to get. These high school kids, I mean, you know, one kid could do 8 reps with 80%. The next kid's getting splattered at 3. So like percentages are pretty much out the door, honestly. Like, cause I came in with my immaculate percentages and stuff, and I'm like, this is crap, because, you know, number one, like I said, the maxes are not necessarily the most accurate. And if they are, even if they are, like these kids are so, there's such a wide spread of RPE at the different intensity levels. But now the percentages are just a guideline. Like, yes, I put 80% up there, or I put 75% up there. That's just because we don't have time to like have them try out a bunch of weights. Like I need them to get them to the chase. But after that, man, it's like hit this velocity, like move the bar with maximal intent and put enough weight on the bar that it's in this zone, you know, and the percentages are just, it should be about this, right? Like it's going to be about 80% is going to put you there, give or take, you know? If I had to keep one piece of tech, it would be that, because I think the other stuff, even though I'm a speed guy and, you know, like I said, I would love to spend all day outside. We could race, we could do all the same drills. And then we could, you know, like cringe, like hand time our 40s or whatever, you know, and we'd survive. Right. We could, you know, do our plyos and bust the Vertec out on testing day and we'd survive, right? Bust the track tape out. We'd survive. We'd survive without VBT. Come on, they did for years, right? But like if there's one piece that I use the most that I would be the most reluctant to give up, it would be that.
That's a great answer, and it gets me fired up to buy some Tendos.
I'm sure there's cheaper options, and I'm sure that I know there's higher tech options, but like I said, this is the dinosaur in me that I just can't have my kids. And maybe some of y'all do, and if you do, great. Like, you know, we'll talk off air and you can tell me, Sal, you know, you're a dinosaur. Like, this is 2024. But I just feel like they're going to be – I hate that. I know I'm old, but I feel like they're going to be on Instagram or TikTok or something and not looking at their velocities. So I'm going to put it up there on a nice, you know, computer that's magneted to their rack, and it's going to be up there for the world to see. And I can walk down the row and look at it when I want. And, you know, so.
Anyway. No, that's a great answer. And for me in my personal situation now, the school I'm at, I'm kind of I don't want to say glued, but I spend most of my time in the weight room. So I'm not getting on the field much with my teams and athletes. And so my big purchase last year, and I don't have much of a budget either, was a jump mat. So that was number one, getting intent and getting competition in the weight room. You know, it's so easy for the kids just to jump on. Yeah. I got a Skyhook, so it's nice. It's right on the iPad. It shows up immediately, and I can get tons of kids through there in no time. And then I stole.
So what? What?
Sorry, I was just going to say I stole one of Ross's ideas, was just to tape a measuring tape down to the floor so we get broad jumps in seconds too. So
what I was going to say, I wish I was better at this, is where I get a little bit lazy. So I wish I have my roster in the Valve Smart Jump, but most days I also have a generic athlete A, generic athlete B, and I know I can roll through those faster. So unfortunately, if we're testing, we're testing, right? But unfortunately, most workouts, it's just generic athletes jumping. And I wish if I was a more pristine data gatherer, I would be able to track your jumps on a weekly basis, but unfortunately I'm not. That's what I wish I was better at. But
yeah, the Skyhook is nice, cuz they can have their own username and it collects the data, and then I can just send that straight to the cloud or whatever. But even then they're slow and they want to jump more times than I tell them to, so that really slows things down, and sometimes they want to skip half their workout and just jump. So it has its flaws.
Yeah. I shut it down. Yeah. Well, it's typically, in general, it'll usually be paired with, our primary, lower body strength movement. So it might be like a back squat and a dumbbell jump at like 5% body weight or something like that. And once we're past that, the Bluetooth is shutting down and I'm turning that thing off, because yes, you're right. They would sit there and jump and jump and jump, and then they would come in and say that their knees hurt and I can't do tomorrow's workout.
Well, you get 10 spectators too, because you can't jump without everybody else watching.
Yeah. Right? Like, that's what I always say. Like, how many guys does it take? Like, what is this, your cheering section? Like, let's go.
That's the intent. That's the competition. And I can appreciate it and love that. Yeah, but so then you had mentioned earlier that you spend right now probably like 60, 40 or 70, 30 your time, you know, on the field or in the weight room and on the field. And I believe you said, or I read that, at Bishop Lynch, you were the man, right? Do you have a support staff now? Or is it all you? And like, what does that look like? How many teams are you kind of managing, working with? What's going on there?
Yeah. So I have one full-time assistant. So how it breaks down basically is I have football, and it's going to be the stereotypical teams you would assume me to have, but I have an explanation beyond just, oh, those are the moneymaker sports. I have football, men's basketball, baseball, and women's soccer. And she has – now, every sport on campus doesn't lift. So there's pros and cons of that. But I'll be honest with you, and I've told our administrators this as well, if every sport on campus wanted to lift, we couldn't service them. There's not enough space and time in the day for that to happen. So, you know, if it ever got to the point where every single sport on campus was banging down the weight room door, we would have to expand. Like, we couldn't service them, right? We're in a good spot right now with the teams that do want to train. So those are my four sports. She has volleyball, softball, women's basketball, wrestling, and men's soccer.
Awesome.
You know, and then we have like swimming, golf, tennis, but like I said, they don't really train. I have the throwers as well. My bad. I have the track and field throwers as well.
It's awesome. So in a, you know, typical football season or off season, how often would you see the team?
So football will come in every day, 5 days a week. The reason for that is we don't ever have a huge block of time on any given day. I would say that the longest bit of time where I'll see them is probably like an hour, a little over an hour, you know, an hour 10 maybe. So it's never a huge block of time. So in order to maximize that, they come in 5 days a week.
That's huge.
Most sports, I would say three. I would say the average is probably three days a week, but football, it's five. In the summer, I'll spend more time with them in the summer. I'll see them 4 days a week for about 2 hours per day. But right now it's five days a week for an hour-ish per day.
That's absolutely huge. I'm happy seeing our football team twice a week for an hour. So, it's so limiting.
That's where, you know, I'm obviously lucky, you know, and taking this job, obviously I talked to the head football coach, to make sure it was a fit, because I didn't want to come somewhere where, I didn't feel like I was going to be able to do my job, at a level that I was comfortable with, you know? So like, if I had, because I didn't know the first thing about any, I'm from California, initially. And, yes, I have been in Texas. I coached at Texas Tech and I coached at Texas State, but I don't know, even though Texas high school football, right, like is Friday Night Lights and Varsity Blues and all that, I didn't know one school from the next, you know? So I didn't know the history or anything. So I come down, or, you know, when I investigate these high schools deciding which job to take, you know, I talk to the coach and I'm like, look, like, hey, it's your program. But you know, in order for me to be comfortable, I want the freedom to train these guys the way that I see fit. And he's been incredible. I mean, basically, you know, giving me the keys to the kingdom, which obviously, you know, is a coach's dream. So I really can't complain on that. In that end.
Ross, you got some follow up there. No, anything on your mind?
I don't. I was just going to make the comment of you made the comment that you can't train all the teams, and I don't think that sport coaches sometimes understand, and administration sometimes understand, that there is a certain ratio of coach to athlete ratio, that it no longer becomes coaching and just becomes logistic management, and your quality of training just goes down the drain. And that's something that that I'm preaching currently, and we're gonna work on our scheduling for next year, because there's been some times where we've had 115 plus kids in that room, and I don't care what anybody says, nobody's getting stuff done.
Well, and even worse, it becomes a safety hazard.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because like you can't lay eyes on all of those kids, you know, and what will speak to the school is when a kid gets hurt and sues you, right now, all of a sudden it's not fun and games anymore, is it? You know? Yep. So, I'm lucky. Like, no one forces me to train a certain number of athletes. Like, I'll draw the line and sometimes and be like, I'm sorry, like, we can't at this block of time is full. Like, I'm not taking any more teams in there at that time. You know, we'll train. I've had three teams at a time in our weight room before, but it's like three smaller teams, like basketball teams and stuff like that. Like, football obviously trains by itself. But you know, I think Blair, you know, kind of where I thought you might take this question and what it got me thinking about logistically flow and all that. You know, one thing that's invaluable for us, so I don't have the biggest weight room. I don't know what the square footage is, but we have 12 racks, basically. 12 racks. But we're butted up to the football field. So, I mean, there's all that space. So literally, like, one thing that makes it more manageable is, you know, we're we're doing stuff outside as part of the lift, right? So it might be like, you know, maybe med ball, overhead scoop toss to a partner, things like that, that might normally be part of your movement program. Like those are part of my lift so that I can get guys out of the room. You know, we'll do like that, maybe like a banded monster walk or things like that, right? We'll do stuff that gets them out of the room for a period of time to free up some space to lift. So that's been invaluable. Like if I had a weight room the same size and it was landlocked, so to speak, it would be a lot more challenging. But typically there's a few exercises each day that take place out on the turf just to kind of take the heat off the room, so to speak.
Yeah. And that was something, that's something that we do our indoors right next to our weight room. And that also goes right into my campaign of never build an indoor without a weight room, because you just got to butt it up. You just have to. And then if you're not taking advantage of that space, you're missing out. And I also think that was huge. You know, when you're talking about your technology and what you value the most, is the VBT. And honestly, like you just kind of highlighted, man, it just keeps it safe. And there's so many kids that I'm just walking down the room and I got to go 12 racks down to go tell Johnny to take weight off the bar and that type of stuff. Just self-regulating. And so it really, really got me thinking, cause I got to submit a budget tomorrow and I might have to go readjust what I got.
Yeah. I mean, it's like voodoo, right? Like they're like surprised, like you can, I can magically tell when you're about to fail, you know,
yep. Every time.
Oh yeah. Really? I'm like, yeah, man, like this next rep, if you add any weight, you're going to fail. How did you know that? Well, you know, that last one was, you know, 0.24 meters per second. You know, anything heavier is going to go down. No, I got it.
I've had so many kids here that, you know, I'll be like, all right, rack it. They're like, I got it. I'm like, okay. And then they fail. And then they're like, how'd you know? I'm like, I've only seen 100 million reps at this point.
Right. Yeah.
So they'll figure it out. But I've got nothing else for you, Coach. Chris, I don't know if you want to close this out here. You got anything for Coach?
Yeah, no, this is perfect. Coach, just we'll kind of let you shout out all your social medias here. And before you do that, I'll just kind of plug. You have phenomenal articles on Simply Faster. And then another one, Just Fly. Tons of content out there. YouTube podcast. So if you guys enjoyed this, please definitely go check Coach out and he'll hit you with all the social channels right now.
Yeah. So on Instagram, I'm Real Coach Sal because I got hacked. And
oh, you know, no.
People were trying to sell Bitcoin from my account. So I used to be Fast Twitch 68, but now I'm Real Coach Sal. And then, Coach S. Sal on Twitter. But I appreciate you guys having me on, man. Like I was in college, I was pretty active on the speaking circuit at clinics and new podcasts and all that. And then when I got to high school, you know, I kind of went into hiding for a little bit just because I didn't even really know there was such a big, vibrant community of high school strength coaches, you know. And once I kind of opened my eyes a little bit, I was like, wow, like, you know, there's a lot of guys out there, you know, like-minded individuals and podcasts, and I can be doing the same stuff, reaching out, getting to know these guys, putting my stuff out there, learning from them. I was like, man, maybe it's time to get back in the saddle, you know? And also these days, man, like with social media and like, you know, even though like 5 years ago I was big, it's like no one knows who I am anymore. You know what I mean? Like, so I guess I got to start posting more or something. So I thank you for the opportunity just to sharpen my sword as well, you know, and make my millions of dollars finding the perfect watts per kilogram.
Yes. If you find it before me, there's going to be trouble. I'll come down there to Texas and give you a piece of my mind. But yeah, I hope we could do it. But Coach, we're just super grateful. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you for just pouring into young men and women's lives, right? The weight room has such an incredible impact on people. And yeah, we're just grateful for all the work you've done and for sharing some of that knowledge and background and experience with us tonight. Thanks again, Coach.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Victory Over Self Radio. Episodes are available anywhere you listen to podcasts. We also have videos and clips of each episode on our Victory Over Self Radio YouTube channel. Like and subscribe and let us know if there's any person or topic you'd like us to cover. See y'all next time.